Well, some of our people have a warrior built right into their DNA. Others of us are a little more cerebral and have to be taught how to use a gun. But keeping in the theme of the By Yahweh's Design show we just all listened to, since I can't get a hold of Pastor Martins in South Africa, my modem connected with his modem, and showed we were connected, but he was not at the other end of the line, so I'm not sure what was going on. And I trust his show last Sunday while I was away went very well, and he was guided by Paul English to get the show going, and I understand it went very well. So I'm just going to do a solo show today, and the theme is going to be the Second American Revolution, although it's not quite what you think. We are going to have a what everyone else would call a Second American Revolution. It's brewing right now. And the militia will be called out. And the militia is every able-bodied Israelite man. And we'll be accompanied by some good people who are not good white people, who are not of the Israel identity movement, but who nevertheless know that there is a tyrant running our country, and that tyrant was running Hillary Clinton's campaign and probably also running Trump's campaign, because it appears that Trump's verbiage regarding the Second Amendment can't be trusted. And even his administration is going to try to scale down our Second Amendment rights, despite his murmurings in public. So it's really hard to determine what in the world is going on, because you know who controls everything, controls the mass media. And we, as Doc was saying, we have to gather our own intelligence, and we can't trust the so-called intelligence of the mass media or the military or what have you, because the Jews just have so much influence in all those areas that we cannot possibly rely on that type of information. We always have to double check everything. However, what we do have to do is prepare our sanctuaries, get away from the city. It's really time. There's all kinds of weapons they can use against us. They're still using psychological warfare on us, creating all of these false flags, pointing at the fictitious enemies, getting our people hyped up in a patriotic, or should I say, pseudo-patriotic rage and outrage, thinking, you know, that Saddam Hussein or his clone is out to destroy America. People who have no power whatsoever militarily can't threaten America. And the enemy, as you all know, is within. It's the enemy within that we have to deal with. And this enemy has occupied virtually all of the major political parties and positions of power. Yes, Brother Hebert, cell towers are powerful weapons. Yes, and in fact, I just got a call from Romania. A listener from Romania said that he had had an operation and he had an implant put in him during this operation. And so he went back to the doctor and said, hey, what's going on? What's going on? I've got all these horrible symptoms now since I've had this operation, with suicidal thoughts and, you know, just feeling of discomfort and confusion. And he's convinced he had an implant put him. So if you're going to have surgery, be careful not to have, you know, and they can inject it into you as well. So we have to be prepared for this. And you know that in Christian Identity, we have been advising against vaccinations for the longest time, probably longer than any other group, even before the anti-vaccine group started up. We were telling people these vaccines are dangerous. Do not believe the rot that they're going to save your life. So, yes, he was set up for a V2K. But today we're going to talk about the Second American Revolution. Actually, this is an article about the transition from the Articles of Confederation to the U.S. Constitution. And he talks a lot. The author here talks a lot. In fact, I'll see if I can. Oh, great. An ad just popped up in front of my vision, so I couldn't read it. I want to copy the article and put it into the chat room, which I'll do momentarily. But just to announce the title of this article, and this is the Washington Free Beacon. Apparently, well, they have an ad for the NRA right at the top, and you can't trust the NRA either. The NRA actually went to, according to Art Jones, when we interviewed him a couple of Tuesdays ago, went before the Supreme Court and argued against gun confiscation in the black ghetto of Chicago. So what's the game here? What kind of games are they playing? These blacks are not the customers of the gun lobby. There's something else going on here. And so it's obvious that the government wants to maintain the hype and the agitation and the anger between left and right. There's absolutely no doubt that that's the agenda. So you can't even trust the NRA. In fact, there's another group, I think it's the National Gun Owners Association, that is actually more patriotic and more in line with our thinking. Maybe somebody in the chat room can identify that group. But here's the link. I'm going to put it in the chat room right now. And this is the transition from the American Revolution to the which we had the Articles of Confederation already loosely confederating the colonies. But it was just talk. It was just talk. So the colonists, after Lexington and Concord, by the way, the revolution started at Lexington and Concord a full year and a quarter before the Declaration of Independence was signed. So the revolution was actually begun by farmers and small businessmen, the so-called bourgeoisie, as the left would refer to us today. Yes, we are the Christian bourgeoisie. We're independent, we're free, we don't believe in dictatorial government. Our law is Yahweh's law, and the U.S. Constitution was a meager attempt, although a sincere attempt, to establish Yahweh's law through the common law, through the tradition of common law, into our Constitution. And the various states followed that example by creating similar constitutions, okay? And the original constitutions of the several states all stated that you have to be a Christian to hold public office. You have to be a Christian to vote. You have to be a taxpayer to vote. You have to be a landowner to vote. There was none of this welfare voting business. And if we can reclaim this country, and you know, I appreciate the sentiments expressed by Doc and Pastor Dan and the callers, that we're in such bad shape that it is really doubtful that we'll ever recover the America we once knew. But praise Yahweh, Yahshua will return and establish the real America, the spiritual America, along with the physical New Jerusalem that's going to come down to earth and be administrated. That's going to be the administration of Yahweh's government here on planet Earth, from which the whole universe will be governed. That's why these times we're having are so tough, because those of us who become members of that government, the 144,000, are going to have to be trustworthy. You can't be running around like a chicken with your head cut off, with like a piece of flotsam on the ocean bobbing around, not knowing what to do. You're going to have to know what to do when the time comes. You can't be a reactionary in that sense of the word, just reacting to things as they happen. You have to have a plan, and as was so eloquently expressed by both Doc and Pastor Dan, Yahweh's law is our shield and buckler. Yahweh's law is our shield and buckler. And this is the attitude that the founding fathers had, and the early revolutionaries, the farmers. Of course, they were all white. And the first immigration law that they passed stated that you have to, in order to be a citizen of America, you have to be a white person, which proves that the Declaration of Independence, they, by the word man, all men are created equal, they meant white men, Adam kind, not all races. And of course, the Constitution defined that as well by excluding Indians and calling at blacks three-fifths of a person simply for accounting purposes, and that's really what it was, so that the slaveholding states could have a bigger representation in Congress. In other words, every congressman had in from the South had three-fifths more voting power than a congressman from the North, and that was part of the deal they made with the South to get the Constitution passed. Of course, that led to the Civil War, but they didn't have time to resolve that issue. America was bankrupt as a result of the American Revolution, and they had to do something about that. And that's why Washington agreed with Alexander Hamilton to establish the first national bank. Had Benjamin Franklin been around at the end of the Revolution, I'm sure Benjamin Franklin would say, well, all we have to do is create paper money and honor it. We don't need banknotes. But George Washington was not intelligent enough or knowledgeable enough about economics to do that. And, of course, Abraham Lincoln did that during the Civil War. But Benjamin Franklin had done that in Pennsylvania numerous times, financing projects like bridge building by issuing paper notes, and then when the bridge was built, those who held the notes got a profit therefrom. So they issued their paper notes. It wasn't bankers' money. It was people's money. And throughout history, gold and silver have acted as people's money, but when there's a shortage of gold and silver, then you have no choice but to issue your own scrip. And that's what it was called, scrip. That's what they used. Okay, so this is called the Second American Revolution, a review of Joseph Ellis's The Quartet. I'm not sure if that's a movie or a book, by Ted Lawrence. And this was written May 16th, or posted May 16th, 2015. And he starts out by quoting George Orwell, "All revolutions are failures, but they are not all the same failure. Those alls should give us pause. Most revolutions, those in France and Russia spring to mind, certainly didn't end well." Well, they were never intended to end well. They were sprung upon those two nations by the international Jew, both capitalist and communist. That's why they didn't end well. They were doomed from the beginning. But the American Revolution was a Christian revolution. Christian common law. Christian common law is what our Constitution is based on, the Magna Carta. And Andrew Hitchcock and I did a show about some of the other British documents, Freeman's documents, declaring that the governor, or the king in their case, is bound by Yahweh's law, and he is not a law unto himself. And that's what communism is, folks. Communism is Jewish law imposed upon the people. And that's what we have in America, the gradual imposition of Jewish law upon the American people by the international Jew and their co-conspirators, these extreme left, the liberals, the Israelis, the Bolsheviks, Black Lives Matter, all those people have been bought off and paid off by the international Jew, by the Jewish moneylenders. This is our situation, and Henry Ford did a tremendous job in his book, The International Jew, explaining how these Jews operate. And, of course, that book has been pilloried by the mainstream media, which is, of course, owned by the Jews, and therefore you never get accurate information. Well, among ourselves, and praise Yahweh for the internet, and we have other means of communication, and we can use these means to communicate with each other and gather intelligence. And folks, this intelligence that we share with one another is absolutely vital for us to move forward. But we always depend on Yahweh's protection. And I advise that Romanian to recite Psalm 27, Psalm 37, and Psalm 91, because the nearer we are to thee, the more protection we have from him, and he will protect us. Psalm 91 is something we're in the final stages with all of the weaponry they have, with all the psychological weaponry they're using on us, and the ray guns. I mean, they burnt half the state of California with these ray guns that melted aluminum but didn't burn down the rest of the forest. The houses went up in flames, literally disintegrated. And trees standing next to the house weren't singed. So we're talking about some very strange and exotic warfare that's been going on here. And how are we supposed to defend ourselves from this? Indeed, who can make war against the beast? So only Yahweh can make a war against this beast. So we have to invoke Yahweh's protection. And that's what the Americans did just before our revolution. They asked for repentance. They confessed their sins to Yahweh, although they didn't know him by that name, but they confessed their sins to their creator. They chose to call him by the name of Providence, the provider, Yahweh, the one who provides. And so that's how they dealt with the Almighty in those days. But they knew that they were his created beings. They knew that they were his sons and daughters, and that he expects us to keep his laws. There was no antinomianism in the the American Revolution days. There was no such thing. That is a modern invention. That was invented in the early 1900s with the coming of the Schofield Reference Bible and with the rapture theory of Margaret MacDonald and all those others who preach this modernism. The modernism is what ails the Judeo-Christian world. They believe these modernist fairy tales instead of going back to the scriptures as we do here in Identity. So the author continues, Ted Lawrence. It created a stable, that is, our revolution, the American Revolution, created a stable and prosperous nation state under a constitution that is still the law of the land 2 centuries after its adoption. Well, yes, it is on paper. It's still the law of the land on paper, but the subversives who have taken control of our institutions use it as toilet paper, as George Bush so eloquently. That's about his only eloquent statement ever, George Bush II. New men in a new world violently shook off the bonds of monarchy, yet restored order in good time, something the peoples of old Europe never managed to achieve. Well, why? Well, because the monarchy of old Europe was resting on its laurels, and it was assuming divine right without having to obey his laws. And as I've been saying about the slavocracy of the South, these white aristocrats did not have any love for their poorer brethren. We are commanded by Yahweh to take care of our poorer brethren. We are their stewards. So if you're a rich white man or a rich white woman, and you have no care or concern for your poorer brothers and sisters, then shame on you. Yahweh will judge you for that. Okay? Yahweh will judge you for that. This is Yahweh's way of testing you. Do you worship him or your bank account? Fortunately, most of us in Identity don't have large bank accounts to worship or be afraid of losing. So we don't have that problem. Most of us don't have that problem. So we're not tempted in that regard. But I think for most of us at this point in the game, it's really more a matter of courage and preparation. And if you're not prepared for the rough times ahead, and they're going to get rougher, the rough times ahead, then fear will overcome you. It's just that simple. If you don't reconnect with Yahweh now, you will just be terrified when that day comes. As Yahshua puts it, there will be a wailing and a gnashing of teeth. And he was talking to Israelites. Those Israelites who did not have enough faith or had the wrong belief. Now, even if you are not 100% identity, and even those of us of identity don't know the whole truth, there are still questions that are being ironed out among us, even in Christian identity. But nevertheless, we have to be of one mind, and we do know, we do agree 100%, that we have to obey Yahweh's laws and act accordingly. And we have to love our brethren and act accordingly. In Matthew chapter 25, Yahshua said, if you do wrong to your brother or your sister, you are doing wrong to me. We must always bear in mind that we are his body. We are the mystical body of Christ, and that he wants us to treat each other as he would treat us. That's how we're supposed to act. And that's brotherly love. Now, when we create that mystical bond, that bond of love, Yahweh's love, between us, and the Greek word ice, I and my Father are one, ice, E-I-S, means oneness, means unity. We have one mind, one purpose, one goal, one vision. We are unified. Now, those of us, since we're merely mortal, we cannot have that perfect love. Yeah, we're going to have jealousies. We're going to have arguments and spats. But those, even in a healthy marriage, in a good marriage, that kind of thing happens. But they always overcome those types of problems because, why? Because we have the faith and we trust in Yahweh and his son, Yahshua Messiah. That is what binds us together. And there's once we're bound together in that way, there's no force on earth that can defeat us. So we that's why I like that song, the intro song, I have to be a warrior, a slave I cannot be. We have to have the courage. We have to have the courage to face the enemy and prepare for that fight, because there will be a fight. But we also have to be bound by our brotherly love, humility, affection, etc. These are just, and that's what's called chivalry, folks. That's what's called chivalry. Chivalry is a Christian idea. Yeah, Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table had it. And they bound themselves together with the faith of Christ. That's what bound those early knights together. Today, we have a non-militia military force which has been imposed upon us by the international Jew, a standing army, which the founding fathers absolutely hated the idea of a standing army. Which tells us they had the faith that Yahweh would protect this nation if we kept the faith. And that's what Benjamin Franklin said to the woman who came up to him after the Constitutional Convention broke up. She asked him, well, what have you done for us, sir? And he said, we've given you a constitution if you can keep it. Right? So the churches have done a piss poor, sorry for my French, a really poor job of holding on to our heritage, not just our constitutional heritage, but our Christian heritage. They've been throwing it against the wall, throwing it against the wall, throwing it away, giving it to others to whom it does not belong. And this is the sad story of the apostasy of Christendom in the world today. So he says, this constitution created a stable and prosperous nation state under a constitution that is still the law of the land 2 centuries after its adoption. Yes, that piece of paper is still in Washington, D.C., in the museum, under lock and key, but none of our politicos pay any attention to it whatsoever. It has been totally subverted and overwhelmed. New men, he says, in a new world violently shook off the bonds of monarchy, yet restored good order in good time, something that the peoples of old Europe never managed to achieve. Why? Because the rich white men had no love for the poor white men. It's just that simple. They lorded it over the poor instead of allowing them to glean from the wealth of the land. He continues, but this triumphalism obscures the fact that the American Revolution very nearly failed as well, for the government made by the Constitution wasn't our first. That honor belongs to the Articles of Confederation. Barely remembered today by the general public, the Articles lived and died in their obscure, dysfunctional youth. Yes, and they were well-intentioned, but really had no force. They had no bite. And our scriptures tell us, Yahshua himself tell us, bring hither those who would not worship me and slay them before me. The day is coming where we're going to have to act on that order. We're going to have to act on that order and not be afraid to act on that order. Because if we are Israelites of faith, we will be protected. Again, read Psalm 27, 37, and 91. Keep those three Psalms in mind. Print them out. Tape them up to your refrigerator door. And that may help you eat less as well. I need the courage to eat less. And etc. We need constant encouragement. And we need to get it from Yahweh. Because rare is the man, and most so-called heroes of wartime will tell you, I didn't come in here thinking I was some kind of hero. It's just circumstances made themselves available, and I acted. I acted without fear. As Doc Waterman said when he was confronted by these KGB riflemen all pointed at him, a peace came over him. I had the same experience in Vietnam as we charged with our gas masks on the enemy position, and they were throwing everything at us. There were explosives going on to the left and right, and to the left and my right, just like Psalm 91 said. People were falling down to my left and my right, and I got a frag through my left arm. It was that point I paused and looked at my arm to see what was, and then a sense of peace and calm and absolute absence of fear came over me. And I saw that there was the sergeant of the other squad, because it was a platoon, 20 guys, had charged the enemy position across a rice paddy from one wall to the next. And he had made it up to the enemy position, but he was cowering in absolute terror. And I could see him shaking from 40 feet away. And I knew what I had to do. I had to crawl up to him and grab him by the scruff of his neck, so to speak, and bring him back behind, behind enemy lines, behind back to our lines. And so that's what I did in this complete sense of absolute fearlessness, calm. The only way I can describe it is that the Holy Spirit had come over me at that particular moment. I had no intention of being a hero. It just happened. The Holy Spirit came over me and made me a hero. And after that was all over, that guy, I won't give you his name, but he was a sergeant. And that sergeant said to me, You made me feel like a worm, right? Because here he was absolutely cowering in fear, and I had no fear whatsoever. Just like Doc said, that feeling came over me, and this is well before I knew Yahweh, and I think the Doc's experience was before he knew Yahweh as well. But we both had faith. I never lost my faith in Jesus Christ, even though I abandoned my Catholic faith and could not find a decent faith in any of the other denominations until I found Christian Identity. Then I knew I had found my home, okay? So from my Vietnam experience and from my discovery of Christian Identity, from that point on, I knew what my purpose was. I knew what my mission was. And studying the American Revolution, I'd have to tell you that there were hundreds, if not thousands, of American revolutionaries fighting in that war who must have had a similar experience because they were fighting against overwhelming odds. Overwhelming odds. And yet, our side won. Why? Because Yahweh was with us. So never forget that. As Pastor Dan said, if God be with us, who can be against us? And that was the truest statement that the Apostle Paul ever made. Okay? So we're getting ready to experience another revolution. So from the perspective of this article, it's going to be the third American Revolution. But the first one was really not a revolution. That was pretty much a lot of the discussions that created the Articles of Confederation were done in peace. They weren't done under threat of invasion, but they were still done under occupation. There's no doubt about that. The Articles of Confederation were conceived under the occupation of the British Army under George III and the Bank of England, of course, run by Jews. And it was those Jews of the Bank of England who told George III what to do. So here we are in the same fix that the founding fathers were in those days, exactly the same fix. Taxation without representation. Bankers ruling the government in total secular disarray. And there's no faith in Yahweh anywhere, not even in the churches, but only here in this Christian Identity movement. Because we're the only ones who believe in Yahweh's laws and have the faith of Jesus Christ, Revelation 12:17. We're the only ones. And I can tell you that Yahweh has protected me. Yahweh has protected me. And so, Psalm 91, you don't fear. You don't fear the enemy. We pity the enemy. Because we know what's going to happen to them. Once those tares are set on fire, it's curtains, and they will never see the light again. Never. It'll be totally over. Second death, destruction of the soul, is their destiny. Obadiah, Book of Obadiah in the Old Testament. So, but this triumphalism obscures the fact that the American Revolution very nearly failed as well, because this was a transition from the Articles of the Constitution, Articles of Confederation, to the U.S. Constitution. For a small group of statesmen in the mid-1780s, the Articles were an all-consuming obsession. These men and their struggle to replace the Articles with the Constitution are the subjects of Joseph Ellis's book, The Quartet. Now, I don't know if that's the Quartet, I think, refers to several American statesmen. From the picture here, Alexander Hamilton would be one, and I would think James Madison, and certainly Thomas Jefferson, but I'll see. I just brought this article up for review before the show started because I couldn't make contact with Pastor Martins. So, the Quartet, a professor emeritus at Mount Holyoke and the author of numerous books on early America, Ellis believes the creation and adoption of the Constitution was no less than a second revolution that represented a dramatic change in direction and in scale from a confederation of sovereign states to a nation-sized republic indeed the largest republic ever established. Okay, that's all very true. So this constitutional convention was forced upon the colonies by a war. And it demonstrated that the articles were not sufficient. They had to have a stronger bond between the several states than these articles represented. Because these articles were in name only. The Constitution, ladies and gentlemen, our Constitution was written in blood. It was written in the blood of martyrs, heroes, and saints. And the vast majority of these martyrs, heroes, and saints were faithful white Christians. This is what our enemy fears most, a unified group of fearless white Christians. The Jews live in terror of another American Revolution. They live in absolute terror. That's why they're still trying, and the fever pitch against the Second Amendment, the fever pitch against the First Amendment, the fever pitch against white sovereignty. They're the ones who live in fear, not us. And they're acting it. They're making desperate decisions because they know they're running out of time. This isn't a new argument, the author says. Ellis's fellow historians Gordon Wood and Forrest MacDonald have said much the same. What makes the quartet different from the earlier works is its format. Instead of straight narrative, Ellis follows the activities of four founders, Washington, Hamilton, Jay, and Madison. Wow, I'm shocked that he didn't include Jefferson. But he doesn't. It's Washington, Hamilton, Jay, and Madison. To illuminate the broader political struggles of the 1780s. The result is engaging and witty, but the structure occasionally causes Ellis to sacrifice context for color, which might make the quartet confusing for those who aren't already familiar with the founding era. So it sounds like a fictional book, a historical novel, as they call it. Ellis's subjects ask themselves one question. What sort of government is capable of both preserving liberty and representing the popular will? Well, the government we're going to have when Yasha returns. And that will be a theocracy. But in the meantime, this republic will have to do. A state government close to the people and sensitive to local interests and needs? Yes. That's the difference between a democracy and a republic. A republic is sensitive to local government. We elect local sheriffs, local congress critters, mayors, state reps, state senators, etc., county reps, county people. They're close to the people and you know them. Whereas if you have a top-down democracy such as the state of Israel and most of the so-called democracies of Europe, they simply run parties. They have no local representation whatsoever. They're just names on a list. They're not beholden to any locality, and they don't serve the interests of the local people whatsoever. It's all ideological, and it's all based on patronage, the patronage system. Praise Yahweh for the fact that our local sheriffs, many of our local sheriffs, are standing up to the enemy and not allowing the FBI, the CIA, and other federal law critters, and they're not law enforcement, they're the enforcement arm of the Judeo-Communist establishment, ZOG, and that's all they'll ever be, because they have taken over, they have inaugurated a coup. That coup began with the assassination of JFK, who was on to them and tried to do something with the little time that he had. That's why they had to assassinate him. And 9/11, which was putting America on a war footing on behalf of the Israeli state, distracting us from all of the subversive activities they have accomplished in the meantime. So whenever the people begin to wake up, listen to me carefully, whenever the people begin to wake up, That's when the next war is coming. Why do you think the Jews want war with Russia? Because they need a major distraction to attempt to cut short this constitutional awakening that's happening in America. And that is what's happening. A lot of it is purely secular, but it's still a constitutional awakening. But behind that are the Christian patriots like you and me who have no fear of the perfidious Jews. I have to watch my language. The perfidious Jews. We don't fear them. They fear us. And knowing that Yahshua is our shield and buckler, and our AK-47, and our M16, chivalry is God's law imposed by the Knights of Valor. That's chivalry. And our race defended by those Knights of Valor. So sharpen your sword, sharpen your battle axe, lubricate your gun barrel and the stock. Keep your powder dry, and if you have to, make your own ammunition. I know people who do that because you know they're going to try to prevent the ammunition from being sold. This is how much they fear us. They simply fear us. That does not make us overconfident, but what it does is it proves that our relationship with our Father Yahweh is what sustains us. They do not have that. They know they're going to be cast adrift. Like in that science fiction movie where the astronaut, his tether breaks and he goes floating off into outer space. Right? That's what the enemy, the perfidious Jew, has to look forward to. And this is why they're getting so nervous. This is why they're making so many bad decisions, because they know their time is short and they're going to try to clamp down on us before they're really ready. Which means that a lot of the hirelings, the jackbooted thugs that they have hired in police officer uniforms and in military garb, they will turn against their dubious master when the economy collapses and they don't get paid. Because that's really their only motivation for doing what they do. They know that they have been hired by a traitor to do the traitor's dirty work. And you know their guts are churning inside them because it's a debate, an ideological debate in their minds, in their hearts, between doing their duty as constitutional Americans, that is protecting the Constitution, versus the guy who pays their check, who writes their check. And the international Jew has very craftily, over generations, created this situation where he has compromised the vast majority of white people as either bureaucrats in their subversive government, or as Judeo-Christians in the false churches, or as liberals and agnostics, etc., etc., etc. Secularized up to 90 or 95% of our people. And even the Judeo-Christians have been secularized. They don't know it. But the Jews fear those of us who have real faith. They know that Yahshua Messiah is going to come back and kick their butts. And we are going to be part of that angelic army that comes back to destroy those people, to destroy his enemies. And we will have that satisfaction of being in that army when that day comes. Matthew chapter 24. Matthew chapter 13, when he returns to kick ass. That's what's going to happen, folks. Okay, so this article, of course, is from a secular point of view. Yes, yeah, the ideals of the U.S. Constitution are good fodder for secular debate. But this was a Christian movement. It never would have happened if there weren't pastors. The American Revolution was started by pastors, not by politicians. Ellis's subjects asked themselves one question. What sort of government is capable of both preserving liberty and representing the popular will? Well, only Yahweh's government. And, of course, they did their best. They did the best they could. But the national government that we wound up with can solve large-scale problems through pooled resources and concerted action. And this was the best they could do. This is really the best they could do. I would say, because our U.S. Constitution gets attacked constantly by the left and even by some people on the right, and so even so-called Christians criticize our Constitution. But if the churches, if the CINA, Christians in name only, CINO, if those churches had kept the faith and not turned against the Constitution, not turned against the Bible with their antinomianism and their multiculturalism, this never would have happened. But it's because the churches have turned their backs on Yahweh's laws that we are in this debacle. It's the churches who have the Bible, yet refuse to heed it. Refuse to heed its warnings and prophecies. Refuse to obey its laws. So from that perspective, the Jew is not the real enemy. The real enemy is apostate white people, the pseudo-Christians, and the secularists who reject our Lord and Savior. Nevertheless, we hold those people in our prayers because we love them. They are our brethren. And this is why we do these shows, to wake them up. And Pastor Dan related several incidents of people waking up. And the caller said he actually saw people reading identity literature. He had never seen them reading identity literature before. So now we've got the Jews on the run. The Jews are running scared. They know. They know that the Christian identity movement is waking people up, and they have to try to nip this in the bud before too many people wake up, because if too many people wake up, it's over for them. So they're going to have to do something drastic. And as I said, this is why they're beating the war drums against Russia, which is what? It has rejected Judeo-Bolshevism and has restored the Russian Orthodox Church, which is better than no church. It's not quite identity, not even close to identity. But Putin has stated that Russia is a Christian nation, not a Muslim nation, and if you want to practice Islam, get out of Russia. If only our church leaders had that kind of mentality. So Russia is not our enemy. Russia has become an enemy of the Jew after 70 years of torture and suppression by the Bolshevik Jew dictatorship there. Russia actually survived. Christian Russia actually survived after exterminating 100 million of them. The Jews could not kill Christianity. They could not kill Christianity. And they never will. Now, coming to America despite over 100 years since the creation of the Federal Reserve Act, 100 years of subterfuge against our race, our faith, and our government. They still have not succeeded in killing our spirit, and they never will. They never will. He continues, immediately after independence, many Americans, having just fought a war against a vast centralized state apparatus, invested their trust in a more accountable state government. As such, the Articles of Confederation didn't create a national government. Instead, they set up a league of friendship between essentially sovereign states. But, as we saw in the early days of the Revolution, a lot of these friends were fair weather friends. When the shooting started, it took the states a long time to get on board. They needed to have a military pact among themselves against external enemies. And that's one of the things accomplished by the U.S. Constitution. In keeping with this approach, each state had equal representation in the Confederation Congress. Most legislative proposals had to be approved unanimously. Left unclear was the Congress's ability to conduct foreign affairs, exactly. Made abundantly clear was the Congress's lack of authority to tax. Instead, it had to request appropriations from state governments. All well and good. That's the way the Israelites operated in the Old Testament. However, when Solomon's son, Rehoboam, imposed exorbitant taxes, the 10 northern tribes rebelled, leaving only the 2 southern tribes to fend for themselves. So, and the tithe, you know, actually the tithe would be sufficient if the government were sincere, if the government were honest and beneficent. People will pay their taxes if they feel that the government is doing its job. But we know the government has become our enemy. And so we do everything we can to avoid paying taxes legally so that we don't get prosecuted or we don't get dragged through an audit. And many of our people have figured out ways to avoid the income tax altogether by asserting their national sovereignty. Barbara Martin is an example. And there are people here in Illinois doing the same thing. They don't want the world to know about this sovereign citizen movement, which is based on the U.S. Constitution and the Bible. So the Jews have to make their move pretty soon because they know that the revolt is brewing. The revolt is brewing. And even the assembly of the state of Florida rejected any notion of restricting firearms even after the Parkland shootings. That is very encouraging, which shows us that the Jews are no closer to overthrowing the Second Amendment today than they were 40 years ago. But we have to keep up the pressure. We cannot, you know, we can sleep comfortably knowing that Yahshua will protect us, that Yahweh will protect us. But we have to get up ready to do battle. And that's chivalry. That's how the knights of King Arthur's Round Table operated. When called upon, they were ready. So keep your sabers cleaned. Use some de-rusting material. Well, actually, if you use it on the enemy, the rust might kill him just as fast as the blade will. But stay ready. Praise Yahweh. Pass the ammunition. Yahweh bless and keep you all. Thanks for tuning in to Eurofolk Radio. Good day.